Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Mr. Denny Carter. We're going to be digging into Denny's seven-round mock draft this afternoon. Just kidding. Yep. Now we're going to take a spin through this week's latest news for welcoming a PointsBet's head trader, Jay Croucher. Jay's going to tell us about all the action on the first five picks, the quarterback market, the receiver market, so much more. But first, Denny, you know, I know some of our other friends in the industry. I didn't tell you what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, you didn't.
I know some of our other friends in the industry have this market cornered already. But I spent most of the morning mowing my lawn and, you know, getting out my leaf blower, which is very good for the environment. Didn't trim today. I think I'm like one of the only people in my neighborhood who doesn't trim. But I was just saying, are you a lawnmower? I think we've probably talked to this before, but I can't remember. Would you be caught dead mowing your lawn? Or does that require a level of testosterone that just does not course through your body?
I could always pop some tea supplements and mow the lawn, but I have no desire to do so. A humble brag, my lawn is really too big right now to mow. I mean, I would need a riding mower.
Yeah, get a riding lawn mower. I
mean, I'm definitely not going to do that. So I pay someone to cut it every other week. And then, of course, you know, the grass grows so fast in the spring.
Every other week, man.
Yeah, it means that it looks like the Amazon jungle by the time they come back.
So you have a nature preserve in your yard, basically?
I mean, it's not a small yard. That's the thing. Like, we used to live in a townhouse, and I bought a lawnmower, and I would mow that little tiny postage stamp size lawn every fourth or fifth day in the summer. I'm really proud of it, really proud of my work. I'm not doing it for the large one. I'm not even going to make my kids do it when they get old enough.
And have you spotted like any what cougars or mountain lions out there in the savannah?
There are foxes, and I'm a little freaked out. There are hawks. You know, you never know when a hawk's going to swoop down on you and, you know, pick you up. Pick up my dog, really. That's what I'm scared of.
Well, and maybe you. I mean, it can sense low T. And, I mean, well, you can't weigh more than 120, 130 pounds.
No, what I've done is I've gained a lot of weight in order to be impossible to lift. You know, that was the goal with that maneuver.
Be impossible for the local hawk gang. Yeah, I mean, the gang, they've been eyeing you up forever, but they know that, yeah, he's put on too much bulk.
Oh, man, the winter was rough on that one.
Yeah, the T levels were good for us, but yeah, the overall heft is just not.
So how do you feel? How do you feel after you cut the lawn?
I like it, but so yeah, a weird thing I have going on when I cut my lawn is that I began when COVID came around. I don't know if you heard about this, the coronavirus, the COVID-19 pandemic.
I heard about it through the grapevine, yeah.
I bought medical masks for the first time, and when I mow my grass, like I would come in and just be like sneezing and hacking, like just sneezing and coughing like the rest of the day. And I had always thought, like, man, I really need to, like, wear a mask when I mow my lawn. But I had just never bothered with it. And then when this pandemic started, I had some masks. So I finally started wearing a mask when I mow my lawn, and I still do. And but now, like, it makes me feel like a pariah. Like, I don't want my neighbors to think, like, there's the COVID freak mowing his grass, like, masking up while he's mowing his lawn.
Absolutely.
And I want to, like, stop every passing car and, like, pull down my mask. It's just because of my allergies.
Yeah, excuse me. I know I can't get COVID from my lawnmower.
Yeah.
This is an allergy thing. I mean, you could have protesters on your lawn.
I know that if you walk by my house and cough, it's not going to give me COVID. But, man, I'll tell you what, if you have allergies and you haven't been wearing a mask and you mow your lawn, I couldn't recommend it more.
It's a great
come in and don't cough.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a sensible thing to do. I do take no pleasure in saying that you're in danger of the Freedom Convoy riding by your house and saying, hey, stop with that. Stop.
But I took off a mask. I explained it to them, actually. The mask does get very hot in the summer, I will say. And there's a few times where, you know, so I have Denny, I have a question. Do you think it's better in the summer when you're doing yard work to wear shorts or pants?
Oh, you got to wear pants.
Okay. I was wondering if I feel like you've got to wear pants.
Got you. There's no choice. Things are bouncing around, you know, sticks, rocks shooting at your legs. I actually, if we have just a moment, I have a story about that. When we lived in the townhouse, we had the little yard. My son said, and he was like three years old at the time. My son said, "Dad, can I come out and watch you mow the grass?" I said, "Okay, sure." I said, "Put on some pants." He said, "No, I'm not putting on pants." I said, "Okay." I'm telling you, within 10 seconds of me starting the lawnmower, a little pebble shot out and hit his shin, and it was as if he had lost his leg, you know. it was the screaming, the bloody screaming. And
your son has been to Nam.
And yeah, right. I think that's actually proven it. And I said, I told you so, but let's go get this fixed up. Anyway, the point is, wear pants when you do yard work.
I didn't realize the pants thing until I was 19. I spent a summer working for the St. Charles County Parks Department, and the dress code was like, you had to wear pants. And I was like, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And it was like a really, really hot summer in St. Louis that year, like crazily hot. But I immediately really came around the pants, not just for like leg protection issues, but I think it actually more evenly distributes the sweat when you're wearing pants. I've discovered like my body sweats more evenly. So you may think like you're being a tough man by wearing the shorts when you mow the lawn, but it needs to be pants. It really does need to be pants for a variety of reasons.
Either way, you cannot avoid the butt sweat. That's one thing.
No. I mean, you know, we live in a continental climate. Like I think Maryland and Missouri are both like mid-continent humid. Like we get very the dash humid. Humid in our continent types, and boy, my God.
I don't have many pictures of me playing softball, but every one of them, in every one of them, my butt is completely drenched in sweat.
Of course,
it's embarrassing. It makes them unpostable. I can't post them.
But we have Stockholm syndrome with the humidity, because when you and I were in Los Angeles, we were like down on our knees praying, just like 5% more humidity, please.
Yeah.
Please, God.
It was so dry.
Oh, we need more humidity.
How do West Coasters handle that? My hands look like the hands of an 85-year-old man.
No, it was crazy. Yeah, it looked like I had grayscale. I would do anything for 5% more humidity right now.
Yes. It was actually an issue. Grayscale, by the way, the Zoomers won't know.
And they won't. It's
from an old HBO show called Game of Thrones.
So we held each other trying to generate heat, and that didn't work.
No.
It didn't work. Denny, this week, Chiefs coach Andy Reid claimed the offense would, quote, not be significantly different without Tyreek Hill, and that the team has, quote, a lot of confidence in what Mecole Hardman can do. Patrick Mahomes proceeded to talk up Hardman on Tuesday. Just like, are we even remotely buying this? Like, had Tyreek Hill become a system player for the Chiefs? And can we possibly go down the Mecole Hardman road again?
That's a good way to put it. I think, did he become a system player? Because really, in 2019, 2020, even 2018, Tyreek Hill was certainly anything but a system player.
He was not a system player then, no.
He was blowing off the roof off of every single secondary that they faced. No one could keep up with him. He, you know, he dominated in both yards after the catch and yards per target and a dot, just yards per route run. It all lined up to like a Cooper Kupp-ish type production from last year is what Tyreek Hill had before the Kansas City offense reverted to sort of a dink and dunk approach to combat the evil two high safety defense that they faced throughout last year. And that turned Tyreek Hill into a completely different fantasy producer. I think that Mecole Hardman has a better chance at replacing that sort of production than he ever did at replacing the production from 2018 through 2020.
Which, of course, is why they signed Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And the Chiefs basically seem to be taking a money ball approach to replacing Tyreek Hill, which you may or may not remember from the book or the movie. They lose Jason Giambi. You know, he has like a 400 OBP, blah, blah, blah. Instead of, you know, the Oakland A's, they can't afford another 400 OBP player, so they're going to try to recreate it through like two or three different players, essentially. And that's kind of what the Chiefs are doing, maybe more underneath Juju Smith-Schuster. Yeah. Mecole Hardman, who can kind of do a little bit of both, can do like the manufactured gadget touches and in theory can still make plays deep. And then, of course, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who they hope to replace the deep element. And did a little more underneath work for the Packers last year, but it is weird. I mean, maybe it's just because it's April 19th, but I mean, the Chiefs did a far superior job of renovating their post superstar receiver core than the Green Bay Packers have.
Yeah.
Where I look at the Chiefs receiver core, and you can't really ever say receiver core that lost Tyreek Hill is going to be better without Tyreek Hill. But like, I don't look at this Chiefs receiver core and be like, oh man, this is going to be a reason they can't compete in this division anymore. Like, it still just looks fine to me.
Several people pointed out on Twitter today that Mecole Hardman only has one 100-yard performance in his career. That happened to come last year in Week 18 against Denver when, as you might remember, Tyreek Hill missed the game with a heel injury he suffered while making an amazing leaping grab in pregame warm-ups.
I was going to say, are you going to mention that this was in pregame warm-ups?
It was upsetting to many of us, but he missed the game, and Hardman stepped in. And here's what happened, okay? And just hear me out. It's a one-game sample, I know, but this is what we're going on in the one game where Hardman actually kind of replaced Tyreek Hill in the current iteration of the Kansas City offense. So Hardman ran a route on 88% of Patrick Mahomes' dropbacks. That was the highest rate in the KC offense. He was targeted on 22% of his routes. That's higher than his 19% target per route run rate on the season. And here's the best news. I know this doesn't sound like great news because these are not big numbers, but they're the best news because I think that he has a better chance of replacing this sort of production than repeating it. Mecole Hardman that day against the Broncos had an ADOT, average depth of target, of 2.1 and just 21 air yards. 99 of his 103 yards came after the catch. He led the entire NFL in yards after the catch that week. So I think I'm a little bit excited.
It sounds like you're using a seventh or eighth round pick on Mecole Hardman, Denny.
It's fifth.
Would you rather have? So Mecole Hardman, by the way, in three of the Chiefs' final five games, had at least one 40-yard catch, for what it's worth. So he was actually finally. Some of those were probably yak jobs, I bet, catch and runs.
Yeah,
but maybe he can actually replace some of that. Who would you rather draft? I don't know anything about their current best ball ADPs or anything. Who would you rather have on your teams in 2022, Mecole Hardman or MVS?
Well, I think the role that Hardman is likely to absorb would provide more consistent, repeatable production than the role that MVS would assume in the Kansas City offense, which would be, you know, some big downfield plays like he had with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. But not a ton of anything else. Now, I'm not saying that it's impossible that MVS takes on a different sort of role, but Hardman showed what he can do with those kind of short, near the line of scrimmage targets. By the way, Patrick Mahomes, in his comments this week about Hardman, you know, said that. He said he's great with the ball in his hands. He's fast. He knows what he's doing with the ball in his hands. It seems like Mahomes was saying, I like that role for him. Now, the communication between those two on those downfield passes has traditionally been horrific. Okay. I think back to the Super Bowl against the Bucks when Mahomes missed Hardman on a bad route early in the game and never looked at Hardman the rest of the game. So So I have some hope for that Hardman can take on that short intermediate kind of role.
I will say quarterbacks say a lot of things in April. And
they do.
Mecole Hardman is kind of like if you're trying to create a player in a lab to get talked about in April or May.
Yeah,
it'd kind of be Mecole, as you know, has been the case every year of his NFL career, essentially. Yeah,
but wait, now the issue here, the difference is Tyreek's gone. It's 25-26% of the targets are vacated. Like, yeah, we have to take that into account.
I will say, I think I would rather have MVS. You made the interesting point that it'll be more repeatable with Mecole Hardman, but MVS, though, like when he hits, like it's a weak winner.
Yeah, sure.
Usually, like it's a 75 yard touchdown. And he's this, like, he'll give you some zeros. So, but I don't know if Mecole Hardman could ever be more than just like a true back end wide receiver four. Whereas there's going to be weeks where you get a 0.0 from MVS, and there's going to be weeks where you get a wide receiver 1 week from MVS. And for that reason, you might lean into the volatility with MVS. And I just don't know if I can ever go back there with Mecole Hardman. I mean, that's like classic like fish fantasy behavior, but I mean, come on, man.
Well, really? And listen, you're right. I mean, every year I like Hardman in best ball, but I like him for a different reason this year than I have this year. In other words,
you're starting to sound like the revived Tobias Funke Arrested Development meme on Twitter, but it could work for us after he says it never works.
Listen, Pat, what you're not considering is that this time it counts.
Exactly. That's my favorite phrase ever. This time it counts. It is interesting, Mecole Hardman. And I mean, it wouldn't be, I mean, these things do happen. He's stuck around in the NFL. He's kept a role in the offense for this long. It's not like it's like unprecedented in NFL history that a guy is like a fourth or fifth year breakout.
Oh, yeah.
And the opportunity is very much there. So there's going to be a lot of Mecole Hardman talk this summer. I don't necessarily know if I'll buy into it, but I can't like condemn it and say it's crazy.
So, well, yeah, thank you.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just not. Denny said something not crazy. I mean,
I thank you for not condemning me.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Even though I should have, you don't mow your own lawn. It's just very good. You know, when you work from home, you need reasons to get outside. That's the one reason I mow my own lawn.
I haven't been outside since August.
That's not true. You were on the phone with me outside yesterday.
It was horrible.
Blew the lid off of this. You were taking a walk. Don't lie to the people.
I was.
Denny, AJ Brown and Debo Samuel have both stoked the trade talk flames as they lobby for new contracts. I know they're posting. Have any of them like deleted their all mentions to their teams yet on social media?
I believe both guys have done that.
Wow, I didn't know if it had gone that far. I mean, is there any chance one of these guys is actually traded? What would be the more seismic move? Debo Samuel on the move or AJ Brown on the move? Also, but we're not going to – we don't really think this is going to happen, right?
No. I mean, John Robinson, the general manager of the Titans, has said like at least three times this spring that there's no world in which AJ Brown is going to be dealt. And you have to believe it because the Titans have to at some point, if they're not already doing this – they should have been doing this 3 years ago, but have to look toward a post – Derrick Henry future for their offense. Like, Derrick Henry is susceptible to age and injuries like any other human, like we saw last year, and will one day break down, and they will be left with AJ Brown as the unquestioned centerpiece for the Tennessee offense. So you have to believe that they're going to lock him up long term, and it'll probably be a huge contract because of the wide receiver market, you know, going bananas over the past 2 months.
I don't think either player is going to get traded, obviously, but I do think it would be more realistic with AJ Brown just for a few reasons. One, you know, he's been kind of injury prone early in his career, whatever that means. Like, he's a 24-year-old who already requires like frequent maintenance days. You know, this is a run based offense, of course.
Right.
But it's more just like, I mean, Debo Samuel, like, is inseparable basically from Kyle Shanahan. Like, Kyle Shanahan has found like his like lab created player in Debo. And I think there's quite literally no scenario where the 49ers would ever trade Debo Samuel. And I do think while it's extremely remote, I wouldn't say there's zero scenario in which the Titans trade AJ Brown. Again, it's very, very remote, but
I mean,
I truly believe there's no chance Debo Samuel would be traded. Where AJ Brown, it's not like I wouldn't like fall out of my chair basically.
I would. Kyle Shanahan You're right. He does. He found a receiver who doesn't have to catch passes in order to be productive, and that's really the Shanahanian dream.
Yes,
you know, come true. So neither guy is going anywhere. But hey, get this: Deebo Samuel right now is scheduled to make less money this year than Jamal Agnew.
Wow. What about Braxton Berrios? He's probably making less than Braxton Berrios.
Berrios is making significantly more than Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, that needs to be fixed. But like, I think the 49ers actually have done a pretty good job of, they're one of the better, like, take care of their guys franchises, where the Titans kind of become prickly pears a little quickly with some of these folks. You know, they cut a first rounder after like, 10 months, but that seemed justified.
Yeah. That was a, you know, slightly different. I, you know, AJ Brown's injury history is not nothing. You know, like,
no, it's not good when you're 24 and like he's getting like 30-year-old maintenance days, like where he like basically doesn't practice, and that's been for like two seasons running now.
Yeah,
where he doesn't practice, that seems like maybe like a little bit of like Jay Ajayi knee or something.
Oh boy,
going on there. The Zoomers, getting one.
Well, if that's the case, then they need to consider a deal. I think.
Yeah, yes, consider a deal. Denny, ESPN's Jeremy Fowler has reported that Trey Lance has received indications, quote-unquote, from the 49ers that he'll be the starter even if Jimmy Garoppolo remains on the roster. Man. Would we be comfortable going all in on Trey Lance in fantasy if Jimmy G's ghost kind of looms, kind of remains in town? Or could we put Jimmy G out of sight, out of mind, if Trey Lance is anointed the starter, say, heading into training camp?
I see no way that I can go all in on Trey Lance as long as Jimmy G's on that roster. I mean, Shanahan, talk about guys Shanahan loves. He loves Jimmy Garoppolo. It's a win now situation for the 49ers. It's a win now roster. You know, ESPN's Adam Schefter reported a couple months ago that Trey Lance is considered a little bit green, a little bit undeveloped as a passer for NFL purposes. Garoppolo.
I mean, spoiler alert, true. If you saw his limited playing time last year.
Yeah, man. I mean, yes. I think that there were a lot of red flags in his game last year, both from a film standpoint and from, you know, an analytics standpoint. And Garoppolo does exactly what the Niners need and want him to do, which is to hit guys in stride on short intermediate routes and let them do the dirty work, right? And, you know, can Lance do that as well as Jimmy G? No, he can't right now.
They probably don't want Jimmy G to single-handedly lose NFC Championship game appearances.
No, that might not be
part of his purview as quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. But the Trey Lance we saw last year, he certainly seemed capable of single-handedly losing a playoff game as well. It's a weird situation. I don't know what happened there, but Kyle Shanahan seemed like he had big time remorse, like almost immediately about that pick. And
there's no doubt about that.
Like he got bullied out of Mac Jones.
Yeah.
He wanted Mac Jones. And then every single time you and I quote tweeted something with LOL, like about the 49er, like that was like a dagger in his heart. And then he went and took Trey Lance for the end. He basically was internet mobbed, internet shamed into drafting Trey Lance instead of Mac Jones.
Trey Lance, you should thank Fantasy Football Twitter for getting you to San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly. So,
or maybe don't thank us, because it sounds like it might be terrible for you.
Yeah, Shanny just seemed in his feelings about that one from the jump.
So. Well, he wanted a baby Jimmy Garoppolo, and that's what Mac Jones would.
He just looked in the mirror like, you should have been strong, Kyle.
Yeah.
You should have been strong, yes. Mac Jones. But yeah, it's got Trey Lance, and he basically has to start.
Just to back up the thing I said earlier about Jimmy G doing exactly what Shanahan wants him to do. No, only Joe Burrow was better on throws of 11 to 19 yards last year than Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is very good at those short little passes, not short little passes, but intermediate type passes. The long ball, not very good, but and he doesn't avoid sacks or anything, but you know, that's what he wants. Trey Lance is not really built for that. They would have to Shanahan would really have to tweak his offense to fit Trey Lance. I don't know if Shanahan is that kind of guy.
We would have to be leery, by the way, of just like a little like Tua Ryan Fitzpatrick. I would probably be comfortable going all in on dual threat Trey Lance, because once teams make the move, they kind of make the move. But like you said, he just loves Jimmy G. And we could have a little bit of a reprise of Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick on our hands. If Jimmy, first, yeah, I mean, where's Jimmy Garoppolo going to go? Yeah, I mean, he does have nowhere to go at this point.
Well, not yet, but, you know, training camp, I think that there would be a market at some point with injuries or where the guys are just looking terrible in camp. I think that something would pop up where the Niners could say, okay, well, we have this guy. You want him?
There's just a couple, 2-3 Jimmy Garoppolos out there, though, right now. And I would honestly, I think I'd rather have Baker Mayfield. I mean, I wish that I probably shouldn't say that out loud. I think I'd rather have Baker Mayfield
than Jimmy. It's close. I mean, Mayfield was really solid in 2020. You know, he shouldn't have, here's the thing, he shouldn't have played with a torn labrum last year. It ruined everything for him career wise.
Yeah, you can't like really get the mail when you have a torn labrum.
Right. No one looked at that and said, well, he's, you know what? He's tough. He's a team player. We want him. No one, they just saw his performance and said, dear God, we can't have this guy.
Zoomers should look up what getting the mail is, by the way. We will be right back after this with Points Bet's Jay Croucher.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The 2022 MLB season is underway, and NBC Sports Edge is giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use promo code BASES22. Get expert insight and access to tools that will give you an edge against your competition at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus and use promo code BASIS22 at checkout to save big this season. We would now love to welcome in PointsBet's head trader, Jay Croucher. You can find him coiffed and ready on Twitter at CroucherJD. He has very, very good hair, is why I said that. As well as all over NBC Sports Edge's Bet the Edge. Jay, how are we doing? Who will the number one overall pick be, and why is it Blake Bortles?
Quite an intro there, Pat.
Sorry. I threw a lot at you there. sorry. What's the settle on? How you doing?
I'm doing well, though this is, from a football perspective, kind of the messiest couple of weeks of the year. Like, I hate the draft. I really hate it. It's so difficult to price. These markets move all over the place, and as opposed to, you know, with the Super Bowl, you can very easily, you know, price the difference between the two teams. I think the Rams are 4.5 points better than the Bengals. But with the first pick, it's like a Russell Crowe espionage movie where you're trying to decipher, like, what's real, what's not, you know, who is reporting what, what's to be trusted. And the favorite for the number one pick has flipped so much, where, you know, it was Evan Neal for a long time, then it was Icky, then it was Aiden Hutchinson, now Trayvon Walker is making this huge move, which I don't really understand, but this does seem to be a lot of smoke around that. So, yeah, just trying to get through the next 2 weeks, really.
Yeah, you said it's the messiest couple weeks of the year, and there's just no doubt this is the messiest draft to game out, probably since the Eric Fisher, like, Luke Jokel year, which, of course, involved the Jacksonville Jaguars at number two. But I think that was 2013, and there just hasn't been any year like this since then, where there's just no feel whatsoever for what is going on at the top of the draft. Not even just the number one pick. I mean, we don't even know what the Lions are going to do at number two. So I'll just ask you, about the number one pick. I mean, how in the world are you guys, like, setting the market there, quote-unquote? Like, who do you actually think is the favorite who do the markets say is the actual favorite right now? And just, yeah, expand a little bit on what in the world you think is going on at number one.
Yeah, so right now we have Aiden Hutchinson as the favorite. He's minus 225. He has drifted a little bit, though, where he was a bigger favorite, particularly, you know, after the Jags franchise Robinson to solidify their offensive line a little bit, pushing them towards drafting an edge rusher. So we thought that that would just be Hutchinson because he's the best prospect in the draft, you know, in that position group. But now there's been this huge push for Trayvon Walker after he tested off the charts. So he's come in now to the second favorite. We think that at this point, it is basically between Hutchinson and Walker. The odds of them going for Icky or for Neal have drifted, you know, well past 10 to 1 at this point. So, I mean, really, we're just trading off of, you know, the sharp bettors who are betting, who will probably have a little bit of information. We're going off of the most reputable mock drafts that we can find and all the info that's reported. But it really is a guessing game. And honestly, like for something like the draft, we just hope to break even because there's so much happening. There are so many markets out there. There's so much demand for it. It's honestly, it's more of a content thing than really a bookmaking trading thing. And so we just really want to get out of it alive. Last year was a total disaster where I was looking at, and last year was a simpler draft in a way because you knew Lawrence was going one, you knew Wilson was going two, and then the draft started at three. But the morning of the draft, I was looking at our number three pick market and it was like, well, we lose a lot of money if Lance goes three, we lose a lot of money if Jones goes three, and we lose a lot of money if Fields goes three. So it was just, that's kind of the nature of the beast. So hoping that there are some surprises and that Walker doesn't actually go one. He's our worst result at number one. And then after that, hoping that some of the quarterbacks drift as well.
Well, Denny's going to lay some big money on Walker right now.
I'll be right back.
Yeah. So, I mean, your job, obviously, you want to be like highly clinical in your approach. So I'm going to ask you then, what is your gut feel at who actually goes number one?
My gut feel is that it's Hutchinson. I just don't understand the Walker push. It's come so late in the piece. And it's difficult to have much confidence in anything around that. But I think you just have to go to, you know, the fact that it does seem highly likely that the Jags are going edge rusher. And for so long now, Hutchinson has been the guy at that position. And so we just have to kind of trust that. And, you know, it does seem that there is some skepticism in informed NFL circles as to how real this Walker thing is, whether the Jags are using that to try and create some sort of leverage if they're looking for a trade. But look, it's a bit of a mess. It is much easier when you just have Trevor Lawrence as minus 5,000 to go number one, and then you can kind of just go from there. But still, you know, we're getting pretty close now, and there's still no decisive favorite. But maybe that'll change in the next few days.
What about at number two? Are you in the industry at large buying the possibility that it might actually be Malik Willis second to the Lions, or is that kind of just more like a mock draft parlor game? And do you lend any real credence to that? Because, I mean, that would be – it seems much more likely the Lions go quarterback at number 32 than number two. But just basically, are you lending any credence to that, and what are you doing with the market on that one?
Yeah, so number two is a mess as well. So I think that what is simplest is if Walker does go one, then I think Hutchinson is basically a lock to go two because of his ties to the Lions or ties to Michigan, just, you know, what they need, the fact that they've gone offensive tackle recently and the fact that there isn't an elite quarterback in the class. It just makes so much sense for them to take Hutchinson at two. If Hutchinson goes one, then it's kind of anyone's guess. I do think that, you know, we offer a market on, you know, who will draft Malik Willis. And right now the Lions are favorite for that. They're plus 275 though, which means that even though they are favorite, still don't think it's very likely that they draft Malik Willis. Plus 275 means we think that there's a bit better than a 25% chance that they draft Willis, which is, you know, not that high, but certainly within the realms of possibility. It is all, it's very uncertain at this point. And I think a lot of what Detroit and then the teams after them do is going to be a domino effect from what happens at number one.
Jay, do you have any really good feel on anything in the top five? Are there any teams or team needs that really jump out to you as not a lock, but maybe something you feel more confident in than the other picks in those top five?
Yeah, I think a couple of things that have emerged is that one of the big changes has been around the first offensive lineman off the board. And that was looking like Evan Neal for a long time. I think that has now flipped where Ikem Ekwonu is now the guy in that spot. We make him minus 140 to be the first offensive lineman off the board. And so I think that, you know, it's very likely that there is an offensive lineman who goes in those first five picks. And I think Ekwonu will be the first one in that spot. Again, minus 140 is not a lock. It's not minus 5,000. So there could still be some movement there, but that would probably be the only real thing that I feel good about in the top five. Outside of, I think it's highly unlikely that Aiden Hutchinson falls past two. I think that he's very likely to go one. And then if he doesn't, I'd be shocked if the Lions didn't take him second.
Yeah, Dan Campbell. Oh, well, a lot of head coaches have talked up a lot of players, but Dan Campbell seems to be head over heels for him. The next question has to do with quarterbacks. So, you know, in your estimation, after looking at this for so long, it seems like we've been in draft season for 18 months now.
At a minimum.
Yeah, right. Which quarterback do you think goes first, and who selects Willis or Pickett?
So Willis, we make the favorite right now to be the first quarterback drafted. He's minus 155 in that market. Pickett is the second favorite at plus 135. So I think that Willis is, at this point, the superior prospect, has the higher upside, and think that he will be the first quarterback taken, although that has drifted a little bit. He was a bigger favorite a couple of weeks ago in that spot. So, and as to who takes him, I mean, right now we have the Lions favorite, but like I said, that's not anywhere near a lock. And then the Panthers, the Steelers, who have been linked to him as well, and then the Falcons and the Seahawks are also in that mix. So I think that Willis will be the first one, but, you know, you might see a team trading up, or you might just not see any quarterbacks taken for quite a while in the draft. And then the other big mover in that market, and one guy to watch, is Desmond Ridder, who was 40-1 to be the first quarterback taken. Now he's 10-1. And I think you know, in these types of markets, when you're looking for, I guess, long shots to win, you want weakness at the top and you want a lot of variance. I don't think anyone is super in love with Willis or Pickett. So maybe a team could talk themselves into Desmond Ridder and him being the first quarterback off the board. Definitely not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, maybe there could be some like Christian Ponder energy there with Desmond Ridder, where there's just like some team that unbeknownst to the rest of the league is just totally in love with this guy. And like you said, with so much uncertainty of the board, like what even is the board this year at quarterback? Maybe a team just goes totally off board and makes Desmond Ridder the first score. I could actually, yeah, that's a really interesting point about just maybe lean into the volatility there at quarterback.
Well, we have 9 days left, right? And a lot happens in 9 days. A lot happens in the final 2 or 3 days before the draft, where guys that you thought were kind of locked into, you know, mid first round, late first round, suddenly they're being talked up as a top 10 pick, top five even. So I could see Ridder gaining a head of steam, you know, in the next week.
Absolutely. And it's weird. Like we're so the moves to the top of the draft, those happen far out. Like last year, like the 49ers getting a number three pick, that was like traditional. Everything about this draft is so weird. Right down to the Saints, like making their move in the teens, like a month before the draft. Like, why do that? Like, why, like, tip your hand basically so aggressively? Like, they clearly want a quarterback bad. And I thought that was very strange to, like, make a move that felt more like a draft week move to me, like, a month before the draft. And, Jay, you mentioned Malik Willis. Did you mention the Steelers with Malik Willis? I think you did.
Yes.
Like, the Steelers, talk about a team that's got to get better at, like, hiding their intentions. Whereas, like, last year, everyone knew for, like, 6 months they were going to draft Najee Harris.
Yeah.
Would you say the connection is that level with Malik Willis, or is the smoke as strong with the Steelers and Malik Willis as it was with the Steelers and Najee Harris?
Not quite that strong, because that was extremely strong. This is a few degrees less than that. But at the same time, like, we make the Steelers the second most likely team to draft Willis at plus 350, which is tied with the Panthers just sitting behind the Lions. I think there is an element of, will he fall to the Steelers? Will he be off the board before then? Probably not, but who knows on that front. So, yeah, it's a bit of a mess. Obviously, the Steelers need to do something at quarterback. I don't think they can be totally happy with their situation right now. And they still have, you know, enough talent that they should be able to you know, to be an impact team if they can, you know, get an impact quarterback. But I'm not sure Malik Willis in year one is that guy either.
So you talk about Desmond Ridder maybe being like a surprise first QB off the board. Not you're saying that that's most likely. You quite literally said it's going to be a surprise. But just with that much uncertainty at quarterback, how many quarterbacks do you guys actually expect to go in the first round? And I mean, I know you might not be super confident in that number, but this, what is your best guess at how many quarterbacks will actually go in the first round?
So right now we've got the over-under at 2.5. And that will largely, I think, hinge on Ridder, where we expect that Willis will go in the first round, Kenny Pickett will go in the first round, and then Ridder is probably the swing piece there. Maybe Matt Corral as well can get into that mix. But it's really, at that point, you're just trying to assess teams, particularly in the back end of the first round. Like, do they have a need? Do they want to have a project if they have an incumbent? But it is it's the strangest year in a long time for quarterbacks, because so many of the recent seasons, these drafts have been shaped by quarterbacks who are locks to go in the top 2 or 3. And now we're talking about, yeah, Desmond Ridder, will he go in the first round, or will he be the first quarterback off the board? So it's pretty unique in that sense.
Yeah, Desmond Ridder, will he be in the first round, or will he be the next Ryan Nassib, where he's like in the fourth round or something? Denny, sorry, you looked like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I know, you know, 2.5 sounds right to me. I would go over 2.5 in the first round, because I think there are too many teams and too many coaches who need to hit on a quarterback, on a long-term answer at quarterback. I mean, I'm thinking primarily of the Panthers, who are almost a lock for some quarterback. But, you know, I think that they're, even though it's a weak, you know, supposedly and reportedly a weak class on a lot of positions, especially quarterback, I don't think that will stop teams from saying, look, we have to take a shot on this guy. We can't wait till next year. Teams, you know, NFL ownership generally is not that patient. Like, they're not going to say, you know what, you can go ahead and you can stink again in 2022, and we'll transition to 2023. They're not going to do that. So I do think I would go over there.
I think the angle there too is that, you know, if you're trading up to get a quarterback in the first round, like, you're not having to trade up to 2 or to 3. Like, you might only need to be trading up to 27 or whatever. And there are these teams between the Lions, the Panthers, the Steelers, the Falcons, the Seahawks. Like, there are even the Saints, you could argue, would be,
right,
despite having Jameis there, I don't think he's necessarily the long-term answer. So they might be in the mix as well. So there are a lot of teams that you would expect would have interest in Desmond Ridder and Matt Corral type of guys, and you know, might not have to give up too much to move up to, you know, a pick in the 20s.
Yeah, speaking of the Saints, the other day a really good New Orleans columnist, Jeff Duncan, reported that McKinney Pickett could be the guy for the Saints, and maybe the guy they made the guy they had in mind when they made that trade with the Eagles. And yeah, we're going to see, that's another great point, Jay. Like, I feel like we're going to see one or two teams that maybe we didn't necessarily, it won't be like insane if they take a quarterback. There's going to be one or two teams like where we really didn't consider quarterback like their most likely day one pick, and they come out of it with a quarterback.
Definitely. And, you know, we saw the Niners take Trey Lance third and then sit him for a year. So I definitely think that, you know, Jameis Winston is not a roadblock against drafting a quarterback in the first round if you think that's your guy. At the same time, I think I'm higher on Jameis Winston than most people. And I think that had he not gotten hurt, I think the Saints definitely would have made the playoffs. And, you know, with that defense, they could have won a playoff game or two. Difficult with their wide receivers and the Michael Thomas situation. But, you know, I think that's why they made that trade with the Eagles, is that, you know, the NFC is, despite Brady coming back, is still relatively wide open in ways that perhaps it hasn't been previously, with Green Bay losing Devontae Adams, the Rams losing some key pieces. Who knows about the Niners? I mean, the Niners are a top 3 favorite in the conference, and don't even know if their quarterback is any good or who it is. So I think that's why teams like the Saints are going a little bit more all in than they might otherwise.
Yeah, you mentioned Trey Lance sitting for a year. Like, the Packers are just going to sit Jordan Love for the rest of his earthly life. Yeah. So yeah, you might not even need a quarterback anymore to take a quarterback in the first round. So Jay, receiver almost has the opposite problem of quarterback, where there's a lot of really good guys. There's a lot of like first round quality guys. But I feel like a lack of clarity on just like who is the best. sort of seems like Garrett Wilson has emerged as like the consensus number one at this point. Is that true? And I believe your wide receiver over under for the first round is 5.5. So is Garrett Wilson, you would say, the safest bet for the first receiver off the board? And how do you feel about that 5.5 number?
Yeah, so the over there is now heavily juiced where it's minus 300. So expecting a lot of receivers in the first round. And you're right, Garrett Wilson, he has separated himself a little bit where he is the favorite to be the first wide receiver off the board. At the same time, he is only plus 150 in that market. So that means we think that he's a 40% chance to be the first wide receiver off the board. That still is a higher chance than anyone else, we think. Drake London has made a huge move, and also Jameson Williams has too. So they're now both plus 200 to be the first wide receiver off the board, and they're probably the two biggest threats to Garrett Wilson. But right now, I think there is a bit of separation between Wilson and the pack.
And then we'll get you out of here on this one, Jay. We're talking about, like, everything's uncertain this year, but whose market has moved the most during this pre-draft process? Is it Trayvon Walker? Maybe the obvious answer. Is it someone maybe like Sauce Gardner? Is it someone maybe like Kyle Hamilton from like a negative perspective, where I feel like his market's kind of like cratering a little bit? Like who's been like the toughest player to price and to see who has moved the most so far this spring?
Yeah, well, you're right. Trayvon Walker, this is a total mess from a bookmaking perspective. It's just a complete catastrophe in terms of where that market opened and where it is now. I mean, his over-under for where he was going to go was pick 8.5, and now it's 2.5, which is just a quantum leap for these types of markets. So that's the big one. And then the other one, which you mentioned too, is Sauce Gardner. Where he opened at 8.5, now he's down to 7.5, and the under is heavily juiced there, where, you know, we're expecting that, you know, he will be the first cornerback drafted. A lot of buzz around him, and expecting at this point that it'd be very unlikely if he falls out of the top 7.
Do you think Kyle Hamilton will be a top 10 pick, or is that trending in the wrong direction?
It's definitely trending in the wrong direction. At the same time, like, when he has that kind of pedigree, he can't slide too far. It's kind of similar to, you know, with Kayvon Thibodeau, where that, you know, he was favorite to be the first pick not that long ago. Towards the end of the college season, he was minus 110 to go first. And now, for reasons I don't entirely understand, he's just nowhere in that conversation. You know, at the same time, his over-under is, well, it would have been 1.5, you know, a few months ago. Now it's 5.5. So he's a big mover too. But, you know, these guys, they slide. They slide very quickly. And it usually happens with quarterbacks where, you know, this time last year, it seemed like Mac Jones was just going to go 3. Kyle Shanahan had just made up his mind and that Mac Jones...
So we bullied him.
Yeah. And then you guys changed the market. And then Mac Jones ended up going, what did he go, 15th?
Well, 15th.
So, yeah. So these things can change pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when Malik Willis was talked about as you know, oh, maybe he's a first rounder. You never, you know, and I mean, people were saying that back in like February and March, like, oh, well, you never know, he could sneak into the first round. Now we're talking about, oh, is he a top 5 pick?
Might go second. Yeah.
Jay, what would be better for you guys if there were 5 first round quarterbacks or 0 first round quarterbacks? Does that question even make sense?
Yeah, for us, it would probably be better if there's 0, just because people always regress their opinions to thinking that someone's going to get a quarterback. And so I think that, you know, people will be betting on, you know, teams like the Steelers and the Panthers to draft a quarterback. And if it just goes and goes and goes and goes, and all of a sudden we're at pick 30 and there's been no quarterback taken, then that's probably going to be good for us. Anything that goes against what, you know, the public consensus will be is generally good for us. That's why, you know, we always cheer against the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Green Bay Packers.
Biased much?
Yeah, exactly. So we generally hope for chaos and the favorites to go down.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think you might get your wish for chaos, because I don't even know. I could barely even remember who Trayvon Walker was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And like now, yeah, he's like a guy with like 10 career sacks is unbelievable. Number one. He is very toolsy, but yeah, it's just truly unbelievable. I think a lot will probably change between now and next Thursday. Just really, really great stuff, Jay. Always great stuff at PointsBet. thank you so much for joining us. Check out Jay on Twitter at CroucherJD, correct? That's your, yeah,
that's
right there.
It.
It's on the screen. I can see it. At CroucherJD on Twitter. Just always awesome stuff. Thank you so much for joining us, Jay. I guess Denny, thanks for joining us.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you, Jay, for joining us.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Denny.
You're welcome. Keep it locked to NBCSportsEdge.com between now and the draft. We're going to have lots of awesome content, mock drafts, rumors, blurbs, articles, you name it. So keep it there. For Jay, for Denny, I'm Pat. We'll catch you later this week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.